So I just thought to start before we do the Vajrasattva, we started a bit on transforming disturbing emotions. So we've been talking about this, and this is part of that middle scope when we look at suffering and suffering, when the Buddha taught the cause of suffering, the second noble truth, the causes of suffering are delusion and karma. Delusion and karma. Karma we've discussed. You've got imprints in your consciousness that ripen in a certain way. Delusion is an off balance in the mind. That's where the suffering comes from. So what we like to do when you wake up to that, to some degree, is I need to look at the delusions that arise. The karma that's already passed, that's been created, I can purify. We're going to do Vajrasattva. Great. Positive qualities I can enhance, great, okay, but that's already done, and what I have to do is be skillful what I am participating in now of my karma. But then there's delusion. So negative stuff arises in my mind. What can I do? We've talked about some of this. Part of it is to general areas would be to basic mindfulness and awareness. General antidotes of dealing with negative emotions. I just wanted to mention some of these. Mindfulness or self-awareness. Okay, you're aware of the arisal in your mind of anger, attachment, jealousy. Just mindfulness. I said breathe, and you just watch. It's enough to notice what's arising in the mind. That's the beginning. It's enough just to notice. Okay? Especially in the beginning of the delusion. So like I said, I was going after for many years anger, and now I can catch it at the beginning where it's irritation. So I know it's easier to get irritation, have a little irritated, right before it's rage or something like that. I didn't usually have rage, but anger. Okay. Then you want to deal with it, apply whatever antidotes you're doing. So with regular practice, I can work on countering again. What happened yesterday? I was angry about this. What happened? I got jealous about that. Then I sit in my internal practice. What was really going on there? You know, what did I want to accomplish? How can I feel rejected? I was the same person I was the other day. Everything's actually okay. Just this person doesn't want to be with me anymore. So am I a different person because of that? I'm the same person. I also noticed, for instance, with the mind of attachment and grasping. So we have attachment and desire towards beings, towards other people. Could be strong sexual desire. But you also have attachment to stuff, right? So some of you are shoppers. Some of you like going to stores and shopping. That was never really my thing. Okay, unless it was a camping store. Okay. Okay. But I wasn't really so much into that. So I just noticed arisal in the mind, wanting stuff. In the morning, I woke up in bed. In the afternoon, I already had an errand. I'm going to go buy socks. You go into the store for the socks. Within minutes, you have several other things in your hand. I need these things, your mind tells you. I need this. Right? I just watch. I watch my mind. I watch it go out after stuff. Then that magical sign that says S-A-L-E. And you go, oh, I should buy two of them. It's on sale. Okay, so you see the mind. So what I sometimes tell myself, how interesting. How interesting. I've seen this thing now. My mind's telling me I want it. It's desirable. It's attractive. In the morning when I woke up, I didn't know anything about this thing. This wasn't on my list. Right? Did you ever think about that? I woke up in the morning, I didn't even have that thing in my mind. Now I've come in contact with the object. Arisal desire. So we go back to, can I be comfortable with what I have? Most of us have enough. Can I be comfortable with what I have? And a little bit, there's a battle with the mind of delusion. So Bodhisattva warriors again. Put your armor on. Patience, analysis, understanding, compassion for yourself. All the good qualities. That's your armor. So here's my mind of desire. delectable, wonderful. Gotta have that. Do I really need that? You know? There you are with the, I mean, this is a thing in California. We have this material called fleece. What do you call it here? Soft?
Fleece.
Okay. Anyway, it's made out of petroleum, by the way. It's made out of oil, basically, I think, some fleece. Anyway, it's very popular in the States. Camping, it's a lightweight, washes easily. Okay. Sometimes I say to people in California, how many fleece jackets do you need? Because you see another one, now it's a different color. And you, so just watch that mind. Mindfulness, self-awareness, dealing with delusion. Number two, general antidote we mentioned. Remembering the nature of the mind. Remembering the nature of the mind. Your mind, again, is clear, non-physical stream of mental experiences, thoughts, ideas, memories. Okay? They appear, they disappear. They come and they go. Not permanent, fixed entities. You can, again, think of them as clouds in the sky. Let them go. They come into the space for a while. Anger. Here's the wanting. I need this. The desire. Over and over. Even sexual desire. Can you analyze? It's a very, very strong experience for people. It's one of the strongest, very strong experiences, especially when we're younger. Especially, I think, men when they're younger, women when they're in their 30s. Very strong experience. So when I was a nun, I'm going to say, when was this? I don't know, 2010 or 11. So 7 years ago, maybe 6, 7 years ago. So I was teaching in another city where I had an old boyfriend. I hadn't seen him in 20 years. So somehow we arranged to meet. We got in touch and arranged to meet. I mean, I look like this now, right? Personally, not all that attractive. Okay, I mean, that's my take. I mean, I'm fine, but come on, you know. Not an object of desire, I don't think. So I used to look different. Okay, but that's past. So we meet for juice. Anyway, he has a wine, I have a juice. Catching up. He's married with a kid. Okay, we're talking about that. He's a 10-year-old kid. It was very interesting. It was like looking at my past life. And so I kind of saw suddenly what I could have been, what I could have had. Like what, and I, you know, was so glad I've chosen the life I've chosen, right? But he's a nice guy. So we're talking, and anyway, we're just talking, nothing, and a little bit reminiscing of old times. And then he says to me, you know, and I notice there's like a little bit of spark between us still, but, you know, honestly, but, you know, not, and certainly I'm not going to act on it, but I can notice there's some kind of energy, and I'm just kind of watching that, just observing, detached. So then we're finished, and I'm ready to go, and he says, so, and then all of a sudden he kind of brings on the, I don't know what you call it, the mojo, the buzz, something. Did I want to go get a room? In a hotel.
Nice guy.
You know, like I was really like, at one point when I wanted to go, a room for what? what do you want to do in a room? Like we can't. Like I was really, are you kidding me? And then I said, I'm a nun. Like, what is it you don't get? Like I said, like Catholic, like that Catholic nun. I said, I'm not a Catholic nun, but if you have a Catholic nun here, same. You know, I had vows of celibacy. You know, we were discussing. I didn't understand. So anyway, I left. And we had a little humor. Ha, ha, ha. You know, no, I'm not going. You know, I was like, huh. So anyway, I leave. And I went back to where I was staying. I was staying alone. And I was staying, and this was just, I think it was a karmic influence, okay? I lived in an apartment 23 years old. 23, 24 years old. I had a studio apartment in a building. The building turned condominium, so you could buy your units. My neighbor, two-bedroom apartment, he bought my unit years later. My studio broke through the wall and made a suite with my studio. So he's a friend of mine. I go down to visit. He's gone. He says, use my thing. There I am in my old apartment when I was 23 years old. Mm-hmm. This is, now I must have been, I don't know if I was 50. I think I was 50. Can you imagine? It's like 30 years later or something. And So I'm in the apartment. I remember the apartment. I remember lying on the bed one night and I saw an imperfection in the wall. There was like a crease. And I thought, oh yeah, that's my apartment. That was, so it's like those things were there to haunt me. So then the old boyfriend turns up. And then the room, so I went back to the apartment by myself and so what I did is I was just lying in bed reading. And I was lying in bed and I said, okay, so take yourself through the exercise. Because I noticed, you know, there's desire in me. I'm not going to say I'm beyond desire. You know, it certainly changes as you get older, but so I just took myself through the exercise. If I had gone to the room with him, what would have happened, right? And I was just kind of envisioning, and I was like, So a half an hour, just imagining into it, I was so bored and wanting to get out of there. Really, but I just wanted to pursue it to see, was there anything desirable for me in there that I really wanted to do? And I checked. So please check again. I checked and I went, no. Thank you for letting me see that part of my mind. Nothing really there. Like, that's how it would have gone. And as soon as I got here, I would have been ready to get out of the room. Like, I'm done, you know. Bizarre. So sometimes it's good to check. Eat the pizza. When I mentioned, eat the pizza. Then go in there in a visualization. You don't have to act it out. In a visualization. And sometimes it just dissolves. Just dissolves. I felt kind of sad for him because he, you know, has affairs, you know, his wife. I know that he has affairs, he mentioned. And so, again, remember the nature of your mind, clear and knowing. These delusions that are arising up, here comes desire, it'll come and go, just like clouds in the sky. You can also see them like dreams, like a rainbow. Okay, something like an illusion. Just like an illusion, I don't have to get that immersed in it like that. And I know it was interesting. Can you tell me your name again?
Kelly.
Kelly, that's right. So Kelly and I, just this little quick scenario we were having out there. And so I went up to my room to have a little something to eat. You guys were eating. And normally I would have had a major obsession years ago. I would have been like, I had this little scene. She appeared to be upset. I said one thing. Did I say it too strong? I would have had a whole obsession about... And I was up there and I said, no, I'll just go down and I'll talk to her about it and check in. And, you know, and then you showed up and I'm like, okay, she's here. You know, sure, everything's like, just let it go. You know, and then people also have their own stuff going on that has nothing to do with me. You know, do you ever notice that you bump up against somebody, they give you a funny look. It's all about me. He hates me. I did something. People are too busy thinking about themselves to be worried about you many times. So more and more, it's just been easier to let it go a bit. A friend of mine, I may have mentioned this.
No, I'm sorry if I looked upset. I was just upset because I was just trying to help, and not everybody's from here, so they don't...
Oh, you're fine. Yeah. You're totally fine.
I was just trying to help.
I know you were trying to do something. I don't have any... Yeah. I never had a thought about anything else, so no worries at all.
I'm not upset with you at all.
Yeah, I'm not upset. Yeah. Like I said... Girl, we're good. Okay? We're good. So, not to worry at all.
I'm thankful for what you said.
Not to worry at all. No, sometimes it's nice to just clear the air. And also in retreat, you know, this is a short retreat, but you get sensitive and you look at somebody and you go, you know. I said to the guy that Christiana is an old friend, and so the centers I was running, the staff can eat in the dining room, the people who work here, no problem. But it's like, you know, we ask to be in silence through lunch, and it's helpful, and they need to be silent too. So, you know, he was a little bit talking quietly. But so then I thought, okay, he's almost done. And then he started again, and then I just went like, you know, we're in silence here. Like, so, you know, I just, and he's fine, you know, but I think sometimes it's good to be clear from a compassionate space. So, oh, a friend of mine, I was just going to mention briefly, a friend of mine in Texas writes one of these holiday newsletters. They're very American. You know, they send a thing to all your friends, an update, Christmas update about his family. And his, though, is very, very funny. He's a very funny writer. And you laugh out loud at them. So he also puts in the end books that he and his wife have been reading. And he, I think, likes his self-help books. So... not big on those kind of books necessarily, but one had 365 tools for daily living. I thought, but he had a couple that the number one and number two. Number one was it doesn't matter. Okay, I found this helpful. It doesn't matter. Now, some things matter. I understand some things matter, and you know the line of what really needs your attention, you know. But a lot of things, it doesn't matter. Like that, like those kind of things. Like, you know, I said to Christiane, like, doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. Things. Don't make such a big drama about something. It doesn't matter. The set number two I found even more helpful. Are you ready? Okay. No one's talking about you. Isn't that alarming? They're not talking about me? I had a friend. Every time we get to go out, other people, oh, you saw so-and-so? You had lunch with him? What did he say about me? Did he say something about me? I didn't want to break her heart to say we didn't even mention you. Like, what an alarming thing. But so they're not talking about you. Okay? So you can see these delusions that rise up, the nature of the mind, clear and knowing. I just have this little imbalance coming through. Or a larger imbalance, that's all. And I mentioned de-identifying with the emotions. De-identifying. I'm not an angry person. I just sometimes have irritation in my mind. Okay. Or somebody chronically depressed. I have a lot of depression in my mind right now. I'm not a depressed person. I just have a lot of depression in my mind. So it slightly gives you some space. What about being non-judgmental? It's another antidote. Being non-judgmental. And this means with yourself, too, not just others. So occasionally you have a thought, negative thought. What do you do in the next moment with the negative thought? I shouldn't be thinking that thought. I'm terrible to have that thought. I shouldn't be a nun having that thought. Buddhists don't have thoughts like that. Just, they pop up. Bubble comes up. So sometimes it's just kind of the observing. Yeah, there's that thought. Well, here's another thought. Oh, that's a positive thought. So rather than getting into the whole duality, good and bad, and, you know, lack of not judging so much. And if I don't judge myself so much, then I'm usually not judging others like that from that space. Tonglin, another great way to battle delusion. Tonglin. I honestly had a problem in a center with a woman we hired. It was my second worst staff thing ever. And it was just a big challenge, some karma ripening between me and this woman. And she wasn't doing her work, and we talked a lot, and she's like, okay, and then she wouldn't do her job. And it was just kind of really went downhill in this thing. So sometimes I didn't know what else to do. And I tried to get other people to help, you know, mediate, and just tried to have compassion for her, of what she was going through. And so sometimes I just go back to my room, and I just did Tonglin with her in front of me. And I would come out, like really try to do it well, and I'd come out, and our energy had shifted to more positive, right? So it would last a little bit, and then it would go back down again, you know, some problem would come up. And so I found it was so interesting. You know, I was so convinced about it, how, you know what I'm doing, I'm not a great practitioner, but somehow it de-escalated the issue with her. So it must have some effect. That I've noticed people in hospitals. I've seen sometimes how they, their breathing will change, if they're very agitated and I'm doing Tonglin next to them, and somehow, like that, or other people doing Tonglin seems to calm, you know. So it's interesting. An animal in distress like that, sometimes the only thing you can do. So those are just a few things. What's also helpful with delusions in general is you want to understand the nature of it. Some things mask, a delusion masks as something positive. Okay, I give you an example because you mentioned attachment and desire, which a lot of us have. You want to reflect on the faults of the delusion. Reflect on the faults. Okay, let's just look, and for instance, you might want to define the delusion if you're not really clear about it. Here's attachment. Let's look at attachment. Defined as a mental factor that perceives an object as attractive exaggerates its attractiveness, regards it as a cause of happiness, and wants to possess and retain it. Attachment. Once again, a mental factor that perceives an object as attractive exaggerates its attractiveness, regards it as a cause of happiness, and wants to possess and retain it. Right? When you think about it, that's attachment. Okay? What is love? Often mistaken, mixed up with attachment. What do you think love is? What is love to you?
Respecting the values that person has.
Mm-hmm. Respecting the values that person has.
Wanting the other person to be happy.
Wanting the other person to be happy. That's actually the real definition of love. Wanting the other person to be happy relates to respecting their values. It's all related like that. Okay, but really think about wanting them to be happy. Attachment wants me to be happy. Very different experience. Did you have any experience in the at the dinner, at the break, about cherishing others? How did that go? People are like, what?
Yeah.
Cherishing who?
Yeah.
It doesn't
come naturally, like,
no,
at all.
It doesn't it? It's very interesting. Like for me, it's I'm really pushing, you know, I'm really like, wait, you know. I did have a little moment. I had a moment entering the bathroom because it's hot in my room. That's hot. So, and then I went, it's hot. And then I went, wow, it must be really hot in the attic where the volunteers live. Mm-hmm. Like suddenly I had, instead of me, it went quickly over to them. But it's hard, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's really hard. So keep working on it.
I'm okay if I've met my needs first. But if I have, it's like I was in first.
Yeah.
If I'm hungry and thirsty, and then...
Isn't it interesting? It's a little bit of put that airbag on you first and the oxygen thing, and then you fix them. So it's like, you know, obviously in planes it's necessary to do it. Then you want to... And a little bit on the path, we are trying to fix our own minds first. You get to a point where you realize you do have to do that to become a Buddha, but you never lose your motivation that it's for all living beings. But it is interesting. Once I got my needs met, I'm really full of giving for everyone and, you know, spacious. The other thing I have issues, when I get really tired, I'm traveling a lot and it's been a long time at the airport and the plane was late, then we had a long ride back to the center, and then all of a sudden something happens and I cross the line. It's like, do you know that fairy tale Cinderella?
Mm-hmm.
Cinderella where at midnight she turns back into a pumpkin, or she, you know, this, I don't know, it's a fairy tale story. Like all of a sudden I cross this line and then I'm like, you know, and I just feel like, you know, some demon could lash out of me. You know, I'm just all of a sudden like, close your mouth, get to your room, you'll go to sleep soon, it's been a long day. Okay, so attachment, possess and retain it. We want to understand it disturbs our mind if we're working with it, you know, attachment. Where love is wanting the other one to be happy, love is all the consideration of the other person. Attachment, what's in it for me? Okay? So, disturbs your mind, leads to dissatisfaction, gives rise to other emotions. You don't get what you want, so you get angry, get jealous, you worry, leads to relationship problems, leads you to do negative things. Okay, I think we're pretty aware of how attachment operates, okay? It's unrealistic. Sometimes we are not looking at reality accurately. So how do I battle with desire and attachment is to first reflect on the faults of attachment, see the negative parts of it, what it makes me do, how it makes me act, that I'm not comfortable, like that. Meditate on impermanence. More traditional Tibetan way. If you have an object, a person that you love, that you're totally obsessed with, we even have a thing. We say, falling in love. Remember that? Falling in love? I really think it's falling into obsession, isn't it? So check, a part of it has love. Were you really all doing for the other person? For a little while, you do. Then the needs come back up. Okay? But you get obsessed with them. You want to see them all the time. Remember those first few days with that new person, the first, you know, few weeks? You want to be with them all the time. One of my friends used to say, friend got in a new relationship, see you when you break up. Right? To me, so this obsessive infatuation doesn't usually hang out, doesn't last that long. Okay? Impermanence. Did you ever look at your person of object of attraction? Do you ever visualize them really old? What they'll look like when they get old? Maybe you meet their father or mother. Then you see what they'll look like when they get old. You know? Maybe they look okay, but still. Hair changes color, more wrinkles, they're a little wider, a little this. They got this weird tick that they do. Did you ever focus on the things that go on with their body? Very unpleasant. Smells that come out of the body. Experiences, you know, we don't think, when you're glommed on with attraction and attachment, no, everything's fine. Why do you wake up 3 months later and their feet smell? Their feet smelled 3 months before, but attachment doesn't see that, covers over that. Delusion covers over that. Paints over it. So sometimes that impermanence. The other thing is if you have an object that you're attached to. I've seen people drive out of the lot in their brand new car. This is a very American thing. Drive out of the lot and I see how excited. It just such an unreal experience. Someone I know, that they had to buy a garage space for their car because, God forbid, it should get one leaf on it. So they spent a lot of money on the car, garage space. Then they needed an expensive stereo system in the car. So it became an obsession again. Then they didn't want to drive the car during one of the seasons because the weather would affect it. So they had to get another used car.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is... And the obsession, and then they drove the car too fast because it was a kind of hot sports car. Then this, and then they ruined one of the wheels, and they had to spend another $1,000 fixing the wheel. I think you could have added up all my cars, and it maybe cost $1,000, right? So just, again, and you're the time-consuming thing of it. The car's nature is to degenerate. As soon as you drive it off the lot in the United States, it's immediately devalued. Whatever you paid for it, it's worth probably $2,000 less as soon as you drive it off the lot. You know, and then you're in a parking lot. People open their doors in parking lots. The parking lots in England, oh my goodness, where my sister lives, I'm always amazed how we maneuver the car into this little space. You know, mm-hmm. And it's obviously everyone drives smaller cars. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he didn't, you know, then you have to park across the parking lot because you don't want anyone to ding your car. That's its nature. So again, you can kind of look at the temporary nature. Sometimes I like to go by, we have these in the States, we call them junkyards. They're scrap metal places. So it's where cars end up when they die, and they return them back into the metal. You know, you look and you go, that was somebody's new car one day. Looks like a rust heap over there. But somebody was all excited to get that car. That's what it is. That's part of its nature. Same with relationships. They don't last. Even if you go along and you have a wonderful relationship for most of your life, fantastic, that's great, it will end in death. That's just what happens. You will be separated in death. So there's nothing wrong with relationship. But do we ever engage in relationship from the beginning like this? I'd like to have a companion. Really like to build a life with someone. I don't know, maybe I want to have kids. Maybe I want to get married or have a home with someone. I'm not sure about these things, but I'd like to do that with someone. It'd be great if they were on my path, we were on the same path, so we could support each other. Maybe we have some common interests. And I know I feel pretty good in myself. You know, I'm not expecting them to, you know, fulfill my hopes and dreams and make me happy. But maybe we can support each other along the way, have nice companionship, maybe we could have a family, whatever we choose to do, and go along like that. It's pretty reasonable. And I know one day we'll be separated in death, but I really hope I can spend time trying to help them, and we can have a nice mutual respect. Is that how we get into relationships? Right? Not always.
Do you know in many of those cases, that being the case, is that the success rate, or... the relationship you just described, like, what is the chances of that ever existing? Do you know?
Well, I think I know a lot of Dharma practitioners that seem to have a little bit more reasonable view on it. To some degree, spiritual practitioners, where they understand the tendency of death and impermanence and things change and people change and, you know, and I do know some people with really good relationships, not Dharma practitioners. So I think it's about, I would quote Lama again, are you touching reality? My friend in Texas, he and his wife are Catholic. They have a great relationship. He says, you know, to people like, do you ever work on growing your relationship? They're very conscious in their relationship. They have 3 kids. They're great parents. I've met their kids. Their kids are great. So, but I see him and his wife, when there's an issue that comes up, they work with it. They work with it. They don't have a lot of blame. There's not a lot of drama. They work with it. They're active in their church. And they coach new couples that are thinking to get married. And I think they're great people to coach. They have senses of humor, both of them. They're realistic about, they know they're going to fight sometimes and disagree. They're pretty clear what they're going to disagree about. So there's some fights they're choosing not to have. And they compromise. It seems pretty balanced. And they're fun to be around. And it's, you know, it's pleasant when you're around couples like that. You've all stayed with people. It's not pleasant. You know, there's a constant tension, static, and somebody's on top, somebody's on the bottom, and there's some kind of odd thing, you know, when you're staying at their house, because I stay with a lot of people. So I think it is possible to do it. My last boyfriend and I think to some degree, had that. It was short, you know, it was 4 years, so, but until we got ordained, I think there was a fair amount of reasonableness around it, of like, okay, you know, we're pretty okay with who we are, and how can we enhance that by being together? It was fun, we had a lot of fun, did a lot of Dharma together, you know. Then I wanted to go away and do retreat. I took a sabbatical from the center for 4 months. So he helped me get ready. He bought me the Rolls Royce of sleeping bags. I mean, it was so kind. He was so supportive. I mean, he was so supportive, I thought he's probably so happy to get rid of me, right? But, you know, I mean, it was that thing. It wasn't like, you're going to go for 4 months? What about me? He was like, I said retreat. He goes, that's great. He went off and did a retreat. I was like, for 2 months. I'm like, fantastic. You know, I bought him something for the trip. I'm like, great. So, it, you know, are you going to be clutching? I think it's very healthy sometimes for people to have separate holidays. You come back, you really appreciate each other, you had some space. Go out with your friends, things like that. So it's a balancing act. You know, compromise, the main thing. I know Lamia, she used to say, though, you can do it, but it's very hard to have a relationship without attachment. I mean, just to be honest, you know, there is going to be attachment. I'm attached to many people. You know, you have a baby. Good luck there with attachment, you know, because that's the strongest attachment we have to our kids. Okay, but there's a lot of growth you can do as a parent, as a mother. Unbelievable practice with your kid. Raising great kids in the world. That's what we need, you know. So, but just, you have to be honest with yourself. You know, of course there's going to be attachment. I see with my niece and nephews, and they didn't even come through my body, what I would do for them, how I would, you know, maneuver things for them. So another thing, attachment, check this out. Attachment causes us to think the object, the person, is the source of our happiness. This person is the source of my happiness. Check. If you're not happy in yourself, okay? So you can ask yourself some things. If this person were the source of my happiness, I would always experience happiness when I'm with them. That's how a source of happiness acts. When I'm with them, I would always be happy. So, is that true? You know, I loved my last boyfriend, right? Sometimes he was a pain in the butt. You know, I wasn't always happy with him, okay? When I was around him. Here, if this person is the source of my happiness, the more I get it, the more time I spend with them, the happier I'd be. In the beginning, you want to spend all your time, but then after a while, you get tired. You need a break. if this is the source of my happiness, everyone would experience happiness in relation to this person or this thing. The true source of happiness is like that. So just little ways in to kind of check what I'm imputing on this person or what I'm imputing on the item, like that. According to Buddhism, the real source of happiness is our good karma, our positive attitudes. It's a real source of happiness. Something to think about. What's really helpful, and I want to, I'll introduce a quote tomorrow morning, is, are you clear what truly makes you happy? Something to think about tonight. Are you clear what really, truly makes you happy? Because this is connected to what makes meaning in your life, what lends meaning to your life. Please think about it. Okay? And I don't mean superficial happiness. Okay? It's not an American thing. Everybody should be happy. I'm talking about deep inner contentment. There's something when you're in sync. Some of you have already experienced that, where you know, I've got it all lined up right now. Okay? An example is, I mentioned this in another class, when I got to the center in California, I was in my 30s, and I, you know, you're questioning a little bit, you're doing a Dharma job, and I had my other career, and I was, you know, thinking, I wonder how long I'll be here doing this, how's it going, and what else would I do, what makes me happier, and I kind of had this idea on a superficial level. I was really happy on a beach holiday. That was, I kind of, like, could I create a life so that I could make sure I have my beach holidays and do that? That's okay. Nothing wrong with that, okay? But I was kind of throwing in, all imputing this happiness on it. And then I thought about the beach holiday, and I've had some. And I thought, well, you know, a week goes by. Usually 1 week's not enough. You want a second week. If you get a second week, that's pretty fortunate. Second week. But then, you know, I've kind of read a lot of books, done some fun things, swimming and whatever, and laying out in the sun, whatever you're doing. Then a kind of boredom seeps in. You know, it's lunch, I go off to the restaurant, I have lunch, and then you're back. And after a while, it was like, you know, so when am I deeply happy? So we had a retreat at our center with about 80 people for a month with Rinpoche. And in the middle of the retreat, it was going very well. There was a lot of people to hold for a month. And I kind of noticed that the retreaters were really happy. You know, our staff was really, really happy. Rinpoche was happy. I felt happy. And one night we finished the last session. It's 11 o'clock at night. We go out to our shrine, the stupa. It's a big stupa. And the lights were on. Beautiful night in the redwoods. And we're walking around the stupa and some of my closest friends. And I was so high. I mean, I was so, like way beyond, you know. And I thought, this gives my life meaning. I want to do more of this. This is significant for me, that creating a place for people to work with their minds, do this work I found really valuable compared to the other work I've done. And I wanted to make sure that I did more of that, and I just kept directing my life like that. So please think about what lends true happiness to your life. When are you truly happy? What do you think that's about for you? What is it that truly makes you happy? And what do you think, how does that relate to finding meaning in your life? What gives your life meaning? Because they're related. Because that was meaningful in my life, that makes me happy. Like that. For me, a lot of it floats around helping others. Helping others, something like that. Generally. So you have to figure out for yourself because it's different for everyone. So it's really nice to think about that for a little bit. And then we're going to talk a little bit, we're going to talk tomorrow about emptiness. So you would, a great way to get in it with emptiness, does the object that I'm needing to have and attached to, or the person I'm needing to have or attached to, really exist in the way I perceive them or it? Am I perceiving them clearly? So, for instance, I'll just give you an idea that we're going to talk about tomorrow, and then we're going to do our Vajrasattva. Is, think about an object of attraction, a person. You can even take yourself back to when you last fell in love and you met that person, you met your spouse, or here they are walking towards you. Watch what we do. Watch what the mind does. Okay? This is the raw data that's out there. The raw information. You got a fleshy oblong thing. Right? It's got two circles that have color. It's got material here, and there's a hole here, and sound comes out. That's their head. There's a longer torso thing with four appendages, covered in material. Hopefully. Okay. Here. They're walking towards you. Okay. I now here have karmic seeds firing of something pleasant, something positive I did in the past. That's ripening right now, and what that does is it caused me to experience pleasure in relation to this object, this person. Okay? Pleasurable seeds firing has me impute, over-exaggerate the qualities that are there. Attachment gets activated. Okay? Sometimes you just have pleasant karmic seeds ripening, and you just take in the information more detached. But if I want to impute and over-embellish what's out there, that's attachment. That's what attachment does. I'm not seeing clearly what's there. Okay? And then I overestimate what's out there and embellish and exaggerate the qualities of that person. They're the most beautiful, most incredible eyes. So intelligent. Oh, incredible voice. Lama used to use an example in his Vajrasattva video. I see this flower, he says. And it's the most beautiful flower. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. But you just choke the life out of it. So what we do is we impute and vomit a projected fantasy onto the information that's there. Now I can't see it at all. And I've just choked the life out of what is actually there so I can really meet the real person. Instead, I meet the fantasy. Waltz along, I run out all my fantasy stories right away, immediately. We're waltzing off into the sunset, having 6.2 children, and we're going to live happily ever after. Okay, or whatever your story is. And then 3 to 6 months later, they show up in reality. The icing has melted, and now, and I used to have people say to me, I thought you wanted to go to the, I thought you liked these kind of movies, or that you wanted to, and I looked at them and I was like, whoever told you that? Oh, I thought, no, that was their projected fantasy on me. What they were hoping that, you know, I mentioned one story of, oh, that was a nice movie. Suddenly, I said, I never said that to you. What? You know, wake up. Like, they, you know, they go, oh, I thought you, no, I didn't like that. That's not me. So think it just attraction. That's what happens. We mistake. You get all involved with the fantasy, and then the person falls off the pedestal, and then you... The fantasy breaks open, and then there's the real person. And then you decide if you want to like them or not like them. Often you're like, oh, that's not what I was, that's not what we were doing before. Well, that's them. So it's a little bit more realistic. You see them and notice desire arise. Again, I'm working with my mind, mindfulness, self-awareness. Nice. You might say, you go to the party. I've done this. Check people out. Nice. Like that guy in the kitchen. Okay? A little bit. But then take a step back for a moment. As a Buddhist, this is our practice. What's my sense faculties telling me? Oh, look how exaggerated. Look how they ran off. They ran, you know, and you can be amused with it. Look how they ran off into this thing. Look how they're making a story there. Okay, wait. I really like slowing down. Certainly do it in relationship. I think it's helpful. Slow down in relationship. You can try like that. And then you can engage a little bit more realistically with the person. It's okay to have a relationship. Nothing wrong with that. Okay? Can I do it a little bit more sedate? You know, you can even watch things that come up in the body. Desire come up in the body. Okay? Go back to your room. Act it out. What's going to happen? How long is it going to last? Right? Think about all the time it takes up. Right? Having relationship. I spent so much time in relationship. It was very time consuming, one level. And very focused in just one little unit. And you get all these other people. So the different things, ways I kind of worked on it. Okay. Working on attachment within a relationship. So we've talked about some of those problems. Okay, when a problem arises, when a problem arises, okay, how about this? Don't assume it's always the other person's fault. Sometimes we do that. You have a responsibility. You know? So again, that's the blame out. It's like, there's a problem. Okay, what's my part in this? Do I have a part in this? What's this telling me? What's my mind saying about the situation? You can ask. What's my mind saying about the other person? Is what my mind is saying, is it true? Is it true? I mentioned earlier about your stories. Be careful of your stories that you get going. Until you've had a direct perception of emptiness, they're not accurate. They're not true. I worked with a guy, our neighbor, my neighbor, at the center. Very close friend in the next cabin. He and his wife. Lovely guy, but big guy. Very sarcastic. The cook at our center. Okay? So he was often quite sharp with people. Just his personality. I come down for work one day. I didn't tell this story, did I already?
No.
Come down for work. Main building. I go in the kitchen. There he is across the kitchen. I have my little good morning. I'm in my little bubble, not thinking about him. I'm in the I, me, mind game. Okay? Good morning. He says something rude to me across the kitchen, which he's done before. I'm not happy now. He just popped my bubble. So I immediately get out of the kitchen. I don't want to be around him. Right? I go up to my office. I start working. I work for a couple hours. But I'm building a drama for the couple hours about him. Every once in a while it would pop up. Oh, he's always like that. He's so sarcastic. He's rude. Why did he have to say that to me? I didn't do anything to him. He always wants me to make him happy. I can't make him happy. He's not happy. Now he's down there angry and cooking food for the retreaters with his anger. Now we have to eat his anger. He's holding the center hostage. Okay, my drama. I make my drama. Then 2 hours later, somebody comes to my office. Did you hear about Jim? That's the cook. All I have to do is hear his name. And now I'm like, what? So angry. So the woman says, well, he was sick this morning, and he thought he had the attack of what he had last month that landed him in the hospital. It was quite severe. So as a result of this, he didn't have that, but he thought he did. He had a fight with his wife, and she accused him, you're not taking care of yourself, you're going to end up back. And then they had a huge row, and then they couldn't find one of their cats. And we live in a wooded place where there's coyotes and things that eat cats. So that was his morning, but it was too late to get a replacement cook. So because he had a responsibility to cook, he came down to do his job at the center. So there I am now in my office. Wah, wah. I'm wrong. And I run downstairs and I throw my arms around him. Can I help you? I can cook. Why don't you go home? Connection. Okay? So check your story. You have to keep poking at your story. Is that what I see? Somebody give me a funny look? Is that really what's going on? Like that. What kind of expectations do you have of the other person in relationship? That creates a lot of problems. Okay, are the expectations realistic? Putting too much pressure on the other person. What about trust and open communication? I think really helpful in relationship. How do you communicate? And here's another part. How do you listen? Anybody married in here? How many years?
2008.
2008, okay. How many years?
4 years.
4 years? Anybody in a relationship? Long relationship? You're all waiting to have relationships? How many years?
7 years.
7 years. Yeah. 7 years. It's a while, yeah. I'm joking, right? Some people meet at Dharma centers, okay? So, what about your very close friends and family? How do you hear them, right? People that you're around a lot. You care about these people. You care about your spouses, your partners, right? You care. They talk. Now, you think they're always going to be there. So they're talking. Isn't it interesting? Sound is coming out of their mouth, right? They may be telling you something important or something, information you need to know. What you hear sometimes, because you're busy, got something else going on, and what comes in is, And then later they say, I told you. And you say, no, you didn't. And they say, yes, I did. You were sitting right there. No, you didn't. And then you have a fight. So did you ever, as a kind gesture, offer active listening? That you're not multitasking. I'm just listening. I'm just listening. I worked with a woman at our center, manager, very capable woman. We're around the same age. We were friends. And we kind of thought our communication was suffering, wasn't going well. We weren't listening to each other. So we're in the kitchen, country kitchen, big wooden counter. She's washing dishes here. I'm cooking with our backs to each other, other side of the kitchen. She's talking about something. And I was very conscious of this conscious listening, so I decided, you know, I'm going to stop cooking and just listen to her. I think it's important. I shut the burner off. I turned around on the counter like this. I have my face watching her back. She's washing the dishes, she shuts off the taps, dries her hands, she turns around, she's still talking. She turns around, all of a sudden she goes, what's wrong? She sees me, and I said to her, I'm just listening to you. It was an offering. And she was so moved by that. She's like, oh. I said, yeah, I think it's important what you're saying. It's a great offering to give somebody. Yeah. Communication. Yeah. Can you make a game and can you understand that you may communicate differently? Okay, if it's men and women, we often communicate differently. If you're in a heterosexual relationship, okay? But sometimes men and men communicate differently, women and women, okay? So you want to understand how the other person communicates. So I watched two friends of mine, been together 35 years. I was so amazed. They're not Dharma people at all. I visited them. I stayed with them for a weekend. She supports him. He's got a big kind of tech job. So we're up in the morning, and suddenly I see there's some tension, and they're running around the apartment looking for a folder, and he needs the folder, and he's got a meeting, and he's late for the meeting, and has to leave, and he's suddenly getting really tense, and she's running around, did you check the thing? And all of a sudden he snaps at her, and she turns around, and she says to him, I'm just watching this. They didn't mind fighting in front of me, I'm old friends of theirs, and she turns around and she says, what I heard you, very calm, what I heard you say was, blah, 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 blah. But what I think you meant was, I'm really late for the meeting and I'm really stressed now. I'm really sorry I can't find the folder. I so appreciate you helping me look. You know, let's find it quickly and I'll go off to the meeting. Thank you so much. And then she's like, and he turns around. I was watching this. I'm like, where's this going? Because he's very intense. Look around. And he turns around and he goes, you're absolutely right. Thank you so much. Let's find the folder. And I really appreciate you helping me look. And you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I meant. You know, sorry for anything else you may have heard. That was a mistake. I was like, brilliant. And then they found the folder and he went off. No tension. He did the same thing to her later. That she had an offhand remark. And he's like, what I heard you say was blah, 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 blah. But what I think you meant was, I'm so glad you're my companion. And I really wish you hadn't used the extra milk that was in there, but it's okay. It's not a big deal. We can get another one. Right? I thought it was brilliant. So make your own game with something. Humor is great. Humor is a wonderful one. That's a catch for them. They just work it out and they don't hold on to it. They let it go. It's absolutely great. What about attachment to the Dharma? What about attachment to spiritual teachers? Okay? So, on some level, not the worst thing to be attached to, the Dharma. Okay? However, if you have family responsibilities, if you have work responsibilities, if you have responsibilities to your self-care, you have to take care of that in relation to your Dharma practice. You know, I met a guy once, really wanted to be a monk. And we have our system from the IMI where you can email and check in and you get to talk to a senior monk or nun and ask them, what is it like? What's your life like? You can get some reading materials. It's very helpful. His whole thing was he really wanted to escape from his family duties. He had a wife and a young baby. And it's like, no, I don't think so. Not really the best reason, okay? But, you know, good try. And he certainly, it was up to him. He could have become a monk. He could have. If he found a teacher to ordain him, but probably won't have lasted very long. And, you know, so you do want to be clear. You can't just run off to retreat when you have work responsibility. You have to balance it. I was running a center. We were 4 years into it. It was going very well. I talked to the community. I checked with the teacher. We got a, you know, assistant director in place and made sure it worked for everybody and took care of all my stuff before I left. And like that, then you can do. If you want to do a longer you can plan in between jobs. I'm in between jobs. I've got a month off. So I'm going to go do this retreat. Take some time for myself. Spiritual teachers or gurus are guides for us. Virtuous friend. They're a guide. So it's helpful, again, to check major practice questions, major health issues, major life decisions, okay? Like that. It's okay if you'd like to form a closer connection with them, to spend a little time with them if they have the time, okay? And then ultimately, they're trying to help you build your own, develop your own wisdom and compassion. So you don't run to them about everything. You want to try to sort it yourself. It's better to give your teacher things that you are interested in. Like, rather than going, what should I do? Laying yourself out there, say, I'm interested in this study program, or I'm actually thinking to take a job over here in this field. I'm thinking to go back to school to get a graduate degree in this. Or, you know, the teacher could advise what you think. And then if they need more information, they'll ask you for more information about your life and what's going on if they don't know you that well. That. But you don't want to constantly be asking every little thing. So, how to live a happy life? Happy, healthy life without attachment, or at least with as little attachment as possible. Okay, Buddha's way, the middle way. Neither indulging yourself nor depriving yourself. Being content with living comfortably but simply. Doesn't it make sense? So you might just see, do I have any things I need to adjust? Okay. Developing an altruistic motivation of bodhicitta. Whatever you do, having that underlying motivation for whatever you're doing. So training your mind to be concerned for others. Training your mind. Great exercise when you said, wow, it was really hard. You know, dust doesn't come automatic, so we train. So that's what we're doing. It's okay. So kind of that, basically that middle way, I would say, balance. Like that? Okay?
Yeah.
You try. So then what we do is, let's say you're totally merged with attachment and you can't shift something. You're totally upset about something. Somebody broke up with you. You've got a huge delusion arising in your mind. You've made a mess with somebody. Whatever's going on, upset about something, sometimes there's nothing more we can do. So you do your Vajrasattva practice. It always feels like it's there. It's always there for me at the end of the day or any other time when I'm conflicted, not sure what to do. So we're going to turn to our Vajrasattva practice in the silver prayer book. Now here, if you look at a short Vajrasattva practice, oh, I see, this is the short, okay, I was looking at the other, this talks about the visualizations I mentioned. If you want to go to page 211, it gives you a more literal explanation, a deeper explanation of the mantra. I read last night, kind of overall thing. Like when you get to the part ha 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 ho in the mantra, those are the five wisdoms. Like that I mentioned, these transcendental wisdoms. So each thing talks about, you know, grant virtuous activities, grant glorious qualities, do not abandon me. So if you want a literal part of it, page 211. Page 209 talks about those visualizations I described. It mentions three of them. So basically the light coming down, nectar coming down, washing everything out through lower openings. The nectar coming down, pushing everything back up, out the upper openings. And then the nectar coming down, purifying energy at the heart center, like that. Purifying that. And then if you want, you can combine all three. Okay, So we are on page 201, and I'm just going to describe a little bit, and then we, if you'd like, you can join in the refuge prayer at the bottom of page 201. To just relax. Imagine again, as we did with the Tonglen practice, your family is to your side, seated next to you. Friends behind you. You could put any difficult people in the space in front of you, facing you. And you can imagine all the rest of the space is filled with all living beings, as best as you can imagine. So imagine above the challenging people in the space in front of you, slightly higher than your forehead, is a beautiful white lotus flower. On top of that is a moon disc lying flat. And on top of that sits Vajrasattva, radiant crystal white being. His legs are crossed in the full Vajra position. His hands are crossed at his heart. The left holds a bell representing the wisdom realizing emptiness, our view. The right holds a dorje, like a little thunderbolt, representing the indestructible means of getting enlightened, bodhicitta. He has a beautiful radiant smile on his face and is adorned with beautiful silks and jewels. Just imagine, he's about 6 inches in height, a few feet in the space in front of you. Much as you can, feel that he is there. In the center of his heart is a tiny moon disc lying flat. In the center of the moon disc is his seed syllable Hung, H-U-N-G. Radiant silvery light standing upright. And around the edge of the moon is his 100-syllable mantra, like a strand of radiant pearls. He's just there to help us purify any negativities we've done today, recently, or since beginningless time. So whatever negativity you'd like to focus on, take a moment to recall it now, generating first opponent power, a very deep sense of regret. And just feel from your heart if you have some connection that Vajrasattva could be helpful in protecting you from more suffering. Or just imagine that he represents something like that. Whatever belief system you have, just connecting from your heart with this energy. And if you'd like to join, we'll read Second Opponent Power, Taking Refuge in Vajrasattva, bottom of page 201. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and in all the three vehicles, in the Dakinis, the secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, in the empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and in all the three vehicles, in the Dakinis, the secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, in the empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and in all the three vehicles, in the Dakinis, the secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, in the empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. Third opponent power, remedy. So imagine at Vajrasattva's tiny heart. And imagine first that he comes to our crown, over top our head, facing the same direction as us. He is very happy to help us purify. And light and nectar begin to generate from the Hung syllable and the mantra garland at his tiny heart, radiating from his whole body, pouring out of his heart down, cascading like a radiant waterfall down through the crown of our heads and all the heads of the beings we visualized. Purifying now all the negativities we've done with our body that wash out, down and out the lower openings of our body till they're completely gone. So we'll recite one mantra. And the mantra is on page 204. We're going to do one of each mantra of the visualization, then you can do some on your own, whichever you like. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manu Balaya Vajrasattva Dinopa Tida Dido Me Baba Suto Kayo Me Baba Supo Kayo Me Baba Anurakto Me Baba Sarva Siddhi Me Praya Sarva Karma Susame Sitam Shriyam Gurum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Vajra Mame Mush Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sa Aum Pe. Light and nectar continue to descend from Vajrasattva's heart down through our crown, and now pushing down all the negativities we've done with our speech. Like dirt in the bottom of a water glass, it rises back up, emptying through the upper openings of our body until they're completely gone. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopa Dida Dido Me Baba Suto Kayo Me Baba Supo Kayo Me Baba Anurakto Me Baba Sarva Siddhi Me Prayata Sarva Karma Susame Sitam Shriyam Kuruhum Ha 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 Ho Bhagava Sarva Tata Gata Vajra Mame Mut Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sattva Aum Pe. Light and nectar continue to descend through our crown. Imagine it going directly to our heart center, where there is a constricted knot of our self-cherishing. It completely purifies it instantly. all the negativities we've done with our mind completely eliminated. Om Vajra Sattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajra Sattva Dinoba Dida Dido Me Bhava Suto Kayo Me Bhava
Suko Kayo Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava
Sarva Siddhi Me Prayacha Sarva Karma Sucha Me Chitam Shriram Kuru Om Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sarva Tata Gata Vajra Mame Mut Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sat Aum De. If you'd like, you can visualize all three visualizations as best as you can as we remove the subtle obscurations to omniscience. Om Vajra Sattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajra Sattva Dinoba Dida Dido Me Bhava
Suto Kayo Me Bhava Suko Kayo Me Bhava
Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Prayaja Sarva Karma Sumsame Chitam Shriyam Kuru Om Ha 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 ho Bhagava Sarva Tata Gata Vajra Mame Muj Vajra Bhava Maha Samaya Sattva Aum Heim. So feel free to do the recitations on your own at any pace you like, or reciting Om Vajra Sattva Hong. So if you are reciting the long mantra and you're learning it, you can recite some as best you can and a little bit take your mind once in a while back to the visualization in between. And just try your best. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manu Balai Vajrasattva Dino Balida Dido Meba Sutokaya Meba Supokaya Meba Anurakto Meba Sarva Siddhi Mekaya Cha Sarva Karma Suchami Sitam Shriyam Kuru Ha 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 ho bhagava sarva tata gata vajra mame muj vajra bhava maha samaya sata Fourth opponent power, the power of resolution. Make a determination to yourself to refrain from whatever activity you're thinking about for a realistic time period. And Vajrasattva is very pleased and says, child of the lineage, all your negativities, all your broken vows, pledges are all now completely purified. Please have some faith. You've definitely purified something. Imagine Vajrasattva very pleased with our practice. Above our crown dissolves into a radiant crystal drop, along with the lotus and the moon disc, along with the moon disc at his heart and the seed syllable and the mantra garland. Imagine this crystal drop dissolving into our crown, melting to your heart. Just feel the oneness with Vajrasattva's holy body, holy speech, and holy mind. In the gold prayer book, so going back to the other prayer book, page 235 are some dedication prayers. Just read these three verses in English. We can chant a little bit. You get some idea of the Tibetan phonetics, a couple of the verses. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. Let's just chant these first two paragraphs. Just as the brave Manjushri and Samantabhadra too realize things as they are, I too dedicate all these merits in the best way, that I may follow their perfect example. Page 246, Master Shantideva. Let's send this out to the universe. And also dedicating to all the people incredibly challenged right now with war and poverty and hostility and terrorism and natural disasters, and may they be eased of the suffering instantly, meeting ultimate happiness. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until the net to remain, to dispel the miseries of the world. Also for peace on the planet, instantly, for all the families of people dying in Portugal in the fire, in the London fire, all the suffering places, may all those people be eased of their grief and their pain as quickly as possible. For those on the planet who need additional healing, may they receive it completely, immediately. For those who've recently died, may they immediately take a good rebirth to be of benefit to all. Thank you for your prayers for my father, because he's doing much better, which is great. And anyone else you'd like to include, if you just want to say the name out loud?
Patricia.
Linda.
Peter.
Paula. Adam. Simon.
And for the long lives of all of our precious teachers, if we can turn to page 244. Short, long life prayers. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Generation Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Thank you very much for another wonderful day. I want to thank you so much for all of your great effort. I know it's not easy, so thank you very much. And we start tomorrow at 7. We go back into silence this evening, at this point. And thank you so much for your great practice today. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful, your wonderful group to sit with. Very still. Thank you very much.
Amy, sorry, could I just ask what's happened in Portugal?
Yes, sorry, there's some wildfires, forest fires, and I think about 60 people have died and lost homes. Yeah. I think it's roughly right now the same number as the London apartment block so far. Yeah, it's very challenging. It's apparently very hot there with some winds and things, so some fires must have gotten started and they got out of control, and unfortunately people have died. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. good sleep, and I know it's hard to sleep with the sun out. hope you have some happy dreams.